have that mystique because of their passionate fan base. You know, their fans travel everywhere, just like, you know, the Green Bay Packers or whoever it is, right? And I've seen it from the other end for all my CFL career, and now I'm going to get a little taste of what it is like to be behind the curtain and really meet some of the really awesome people that make this organization work. Like last night, you know, a gentleman that picked me up at the airport is a guy that's been volunteering for the Riders for 35 years, and I would never have gotten the chance to meet this guy who loves the CFL as much as I do if I didn't, you know, take this opportunity. So I'm all about experiences and people, and what I'm learning is that there's good people everywhere.
Are you playing tomorrow?
Absolutely, yeah, no, for sure. They're not signing me to be a cheerleader, so, you know.
The last question I had for you, Randy, is just, you know, you mentioned it. It's happened twice before. You had this kind of come up and then fall apart, and now the third time it worked out. And, you know, people may look at this and say, there's only 3 weeks left. Why now? So I guess that's my question. Why take this opportunity to play, you know, maybe two or three more games?
That is a fantastic question, because I knew it was going to come up, and the people have asked me. Because, yeah, you know, in the ideal world, I'd be going to a team that's competing for a championship. That's what everybody wants, right? I mean, anyone that says that they're not pushing to go for a championship shouldn't be playing. So, you know, obviously in an ideal world, when I hope the call would come, it would be closer to the beginning of the season that I could have helped the team get to a point where they're fit, you know, going to the postseason. In the situation that I'm at now, you know, the team that called me is not in that position. So the next thing that I have to see is, why would I do it? And, you know, this is what I say. There are many reasons. If someone's going to turn on the lights and someone's going to turn on the scoreboard and someone's going to get up in the morning to go sell popcorn and someone's going to get up in the morning to go sell beer, and if 20,000 people are going to drive from 3 hours drive to get to that stadium to watch a bunch of guys play football, it's worth going to compete for. And if anyone knows me, I'm a competitor. I love, love, love to compete. And we've got three games left, and those are three opportunities to compete. I play ball hockey with my team, my team in the Super League, the Giants, and I approach it with the same mentality. I love to compete. So it's a great opportunity for that. But beyond that, some people know I took on a job with the Reebok Fitness Foundation, and we run this program Box in schools. It's a free program for schools all across Canada. And the mandate is basically to introduce schools to this free program that stimulates kids with physical activity before the morning begins and prepares them for their day. And it's an extension of everything I've ever did. It's an extension of what I studied at university. And that's a program. I'm in charge of basically Alberta and the prairies going east to Manitoba. And this is a fantastic opportunity not only to play, but to impact this community and use the influence that I wouldn't have had if I didn't have a chance to be a Rough Rider player. So I know I can walk into a school now and represent as a Rough Rider player and be able to present this program that can impact that community. So not only can I benefit the Calgary community firsthand because I live there and, you know, that's my home and that's the place I love, but now I can go impact Regina, which I don't have too much exposure to, but it's a natural fit. So there are so many positives. And, yeah, you know, when you go back, you know, selfishly, yeah, I love to play football. I'm a CFL fan. And how many 40-year-olds get asked to go play on game day 2 days before the game? And for me, I'm all about a great experience and a great story. So there's that. There's how I can impact the community. I just came from a hospital visit with teammates that I don't even know their names. But I heard them say they wanted to go to the hospital. I asked if I can jump in the car, and already I get to do something that I love doing beyond just playing. So, you know, if I get a call, you keep that box open, as I say, Pat, and who knows, next year might happen again. I don't have any illusions that this is going to go beyond three games, but me keeping my skills sharp and being able to participate in action at the end of the season, you never know what it means for the future, right?
You're a fascinating man, Mr. Chevrier, and I just find your entire... Randy Chevrier is with us, by the way, former Stampeder, and now a member of the Saskatchewan Roughriders to finish the season. I find your outlook to be as enlightened and as unique as you can possibly find in this situation, that you're doing it for all the right reasons. You have no illusions that it would carry over into next year. You were prepared for this, but you were fine with not playing football. It's not something you hear a lot, and I for that reason, I'm not convinced that this is your last few long snaps either. Like, I don't know if you're going to be on a team to start next season. Nobody knows. You don't know. But man, just the way that you've approached this whole thing, I wouldn't write off you being on a CFL roster somewhere next year either. Which is a really cool thing.
Well, Pat, I appreciate that. And it's funny, a few years ago when I negotiated a contract with Huff, and, you know, when as you get older and longer in the tooth, you got to make some adjustments so that, you know, it makes it feasible for them to bring a guy back. And so, you know, a couple of hometown discounts there, which I was glad to take because being a member of the Stampeders was one of the greatest joys of my life. But I remember one day he asked me, he's like, Chef, he's like, you're 33 years old. How long do you expect to play? And I looked him straight in the eye. I said, Huff, I'm playing till I'm 40. And there's a lot that goes into getting to where I am. But you know what? 40 years old, I'll be stepping on the field. I couldn't be more excited. Like, it's a brand new day. But at the same time, you know, I appreciate you for letting me tell the story. And hopefully it's an inspiration for people that, you know, when they're told that they can't do something, you know, sometimes you just got to have a little bit extra belief when no one else does. And, you know, who knows what can happen. And you're right. The only thing I'll guarantee is I will not be playing football when I'm 50, for sure.
Well, never say never. Hey, buddy, congratulations. I think it's really awesome. You've been such a good friend of the program for so, so long. I know Robbie's not here, but I can, he's out hunting, but I can guarantee you Robbie would be passing along the exact same congratulations that Will and I just passed along. So awesome stuff. It'll make us despise the Riders a little bit less for the next few games when you're playing for the green and white. And honestly, good luck. I hope it's everything you want it to be, my friend.
I appreciate you guys, and I'll be back in Calgary on and off. The Riders is my managers at Reebok, and the Riders have been very gracious in allowing me to make sure I keep up with the commitments I previously made. So you might see me driving around Calgary next week wondering what I'm doing there, and I'm going back and forth because I got a family to feed and family to see. So but I appreciate you guys.
Good stuff, brother, and good luck this weekend. Hey,
thanks, Chevy.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend, and we'll speak to you soon.
You too, pal. Randy Chevrier, all of a sudden, working for Reebok and now long snapper for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. It's a cool story, and it's really awesome to see. I know we're way over time, but we
look. That's an exception.
Well, Jason Lattler, there was so much stuff to get into with Jason, and Randy is absolutely an exception. See, as I've told you, timing matters sometimes, and then timing doesn't matter. He joined us down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Savor a juicy burger with 100% Angus beef and a hand-scoop milkshake. Visit their new location, now open in East Hill, 17th Avenue, Southeast in Stoney. That's actually not too far from where we are right now. We're just east of 52nd, so a little further down 17th, and you'll get to South Street. Where are we? We're at Mr. Fireplace, the longtime sponsor of Flames Warm-Up, longtime partner of Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It is an absolute honor being here at Mr. Fireplace, knowing how long they have been on board with us, and now until tomorrow, so it's coming to an end. Spin to Win is coming to an end, where you can win 15 to 50% off your purchase here at Mr. Fireplace. So you come on in, you spin the wheel, and all of a sudden you could be getting an outstanding deal on whatever you end up purchasing. Now is the time to save big on heat and glow fireplaces. On top of that, great brands like Heat-O-Later, Quadrifier, and Harman. Whatever your taste may be, standalone, built-in, whatever you're looking for, they've got the expert staff, they've got the outstanding selection, and they're going to be able to fit you right. And on top of that, a little while ago when we were talking about Mr. Fireplace, the boss man emails me, he says, not only are they going to hook you up and put you in the right direction if you are buying new, but in terms of service, in terms of repairs, they're going to help you there too. There's a reason why Mr. Fireplace fireplace has been an institution in this city for almost 50 years, celebrating 49 years right now at 5410 17th Avenue Southeast. The Big Show is live from Mr. Fireplace this afternoon. We'll have to abbreviate headlines in the Stampeders report, but we'll get through it. All right, welcome back to the program. Live from Mr. Fireplace this afternoon. Thank you very much to Randy Chevrier, who joined us, and that's really cool that he's heading back to the CFL. That's why we're a little overtime. You know, Jason Lacanfora and then Randy, things got a little backed up, but you know what? We made the exception today. It's time for headlines. He's Will. I'm Pat, and he is Patrick Dumas, who's got our biggest stories of the day. Mr. Dumas?
It's all right. Tough start to the 2016-17 campaign for the Calgary Flames. Some good, some bad. Brian Elliott, he's allowed 14 goals in three starts and has an NHL worst 4.72 goals against. Power play ain't doing too well either. Now, five games is obviously a terrible sample size. Coming up, they got two games against St. Louis, one at the United Center against the Hawks. Now, these three games are against two of the NHL elites. Is this just what the doctor ordered, playing against some great competition? Or could it lead to even more dark times before the calendar even gets to November?
Well, the next three games, you're right. St. Louis, Chicago, St. Louis, one at home, two on the road. That's about as difficult as it gets in a couple of days. And then they've got, you know, Ottawa and Washington on home ice. November is an extremely difficult road schedule for the Flames. So is it exactly what the doctor ordered? I don't know. To me, at this point, Will, I'm not really looking at the opposition as the important thing. I think right now the Flames just have to, you know, figure out their own side of things, and they need to get more comfortable with their game. I do wonder if going out on the road following tomorrow might be a helpful thing for them. I do wonder if getting away from some of the distractions here on home ice, just because of how bad things have been to start, if that might help. But yeah, I don't know why. I don't know if it's what the doctor ordered. I don't really know if the opposition matters at this point. They've got to figure their own stuff out.
Yeah, I think for the Flames right now, the biggest thing is to worry about your own play. And you know, the tough opponents probably does help when you're in a little bit of a slump. And you know, some people might think that playing tough opponents is hurtful at this time, but I think it's probably something that could help this team. And you know, I think right now the things they have to work out are on their own side, not the opposition. So it's not really like the schedule to start the year was all that tough, and I think a lot of their struggles have to do with their own game and not their opponents. So we'll wait and see what happens, but who knows? This could be the good thing, or it could be dreadful. We'll wait and see.
Two more weeks in the CFL regular season. Where does the time go? Ottawa hosts Hamilton at 5 o'clock tonight. With a win, Red Blacks can clinch back-to-back East Division titles. And then following that one at 7 o'clock, McMahon Stadium, the Stamps look for their 16th win of the 2016 CFL season. It would tie the 1989 Edmonton Eskimos for most wins in a season. Calgary, they're at another level right now. Key is to staying healthy. What do we look for tonight? And if anyone, who's got the best chance of taking out the Stamps?
I mean, as the Stamps get set to take on the Argos tonight, I really don't know if it's a team out east that I think that I would put in that conversation, Will. I still wonder if I still look at one of BC or Winnipeg as one of the two teams that might have the best shot. Hamilton's been so inconsistent and so underwhelming this year. You know, Ottawa can't seem to figure out their own side of things. So for me, I look to Winnipeg or BC in a West Division final. I guess Edmonton's probably going the crossover road. So BC,
clinched.
Yeah, they've clinched the crossover, but we haven't figured out what the final look in the West Division is going to look like. They could end up higher in the West. But to me, the thing that probably ends up being the best shot for the Stampeders to not advance to a Grey Cup is that 3-week break getting the better of them and somebody being fresher when they play potentially in a West Division final. But I just don't see it happening. I guess to answer that question, though, it's Winnipeg or BC for me.
Yeah, in the same way, and I think you can get some momentum off that West Division semi. Winnipeg, I guess you look at that game, what was it, about a month ago now, where they came all the way back and almost beat Calgary at McMahon. That's probably the team that I think would do the most damage. And again, I think we've seen it before in years past, obviously, not only with that last week bye, but just having that break period waiting for the West Final. Sometimes you're a little bit sitting back, and the team that's already got a playoff win is feeling confident, feeling good about themselves, and they come in with a good game plan – and can do some damage. So I think any of those teams that advance the West final game is probably the one where I look at and say that's maybe the chance that the Stamps could lose. But who knows what it ends up looking like. And you look at the situation, nobody in the East really scares me for the Stampeders. Who knows, Pat? We could have a Battle of Alberta, Great Cup in Toronto.
Stamps could probably go a month without playing a meaningful football game. Mm-hmm. Cubs-Dodgers game 6 tomorrow night. Cubbies have a 3-2 series lead. Now, the Cubs, they haven't been to a World Series since the end of World War II, 1945. They haven't played in an elimination game in the National League Championship Series at Wrigley since 2003, and we all know what happened in that one. Dodgers, they'll have Clayton Kershaw on the mound tomorrow. Cubs counter with Kyle Hendricks. Do the Dodgers dig deep to find a way to get this to 7, or do the Cubbies get ready to head to Cleveland?
Well, I mean, with Kershaw on the mound, you sure do feel confident about LA's chances, and the way Kershaw's pitched in this postseason, specifically whether it be out of the bullpen or as a starter, I mean, he's been as perfect and lights out as you can possibly get. So I think that the money's probably going to be on the Dodgers tomorrow. Yet in saying that, this Cubs team, I think, is a group that can, at the very least, make life difficult on Kershaw. I kind of worry from a Cubs standpoint if this thing gets to a game 7. And I worry because of the nervous energy. I worry about how tense that city's going to be. And I worry about, knowing history's on the line once again, how tense that team would be if they have to play a game 7. And it kind of sets up like they might have to play a game 7 because Kershaw's on the mound. So I know it's tough. But I really worry about the Cubs in Game 7. I kind of feel like their best chance might be in Game 6 despite who they're playing and who's pitching on the other side.
Well, and part of that Game 7 situation, too, I mean, Dave Roberts has already come out and said, the manager of the LA Dodgers has come out and said that if we get to a Game 7, you can fully expect Clayton Kershaw to come out of the bullpen for at least an inning or two, similar to what they did in Game 5 against Washington. So, yeah, if I'm a Cubs fan, you're feeling good that you're up 3-2, kind of similar to what we talked about earlier, Pat. I mean, if the Dodgers were up 3-2 right now heading back to Wrigley, I think Cubs fans would be a little bit more nervous. But you're confident with the series lead, but you're looking at this, too, with a lot of nervous energy because the way things have set up for a Game 6 and Game 7 where the Dodgers have Kershaw going in Game 6 and Rich Hill going in Game 7, who's been brilliant for them since coming over in a trade from Oakland. So it sets up in the Dodgers' favor, but again, winning back-to-back in Wrigley might be tough, but I do worry if it gets to a Game 7. You mentioned the pressure and just the nervous energy those players would be feeling. They kind of feel like the whole city is watching them, and that's something you got to watch for here in the weekend.
And you got to beat the best. I mean, if you're going to win a World Series, you got to beat the best. So maybe going through Kershaw is the way to go if you're the Cubs. I don't love the way it sets up for Chicago, and yet they're a game away from advancing to the World
Series.
Funny
thing, too, they either score a lot of runs or they score nothing.
They get shut
series.
Out. Yeah.
That's it for headlines on October 21st.
Okay, the Calgary Stampeders getting set for tonight's showdown with the Toronto Argonauts. 14-1-1 Stamps. The chase for history continues as they try and lock down the best season in CFL history. They do that at McMahon Stadium tonight. It's time for the Stampeders Report. Mr. Dumas?
All right, a lot of looking for in tonight's game. With a win, they'll go 9-0 on home field, sweep their home schedule. With a win, they'll win their 14th in a row. And with a win, as I just said, they'll tie the 1989 Eskimos for most wins in a single season. Looking at the depth chart tonight, only two big changes from last week. No Marquay McDaniel and no Gerard Mayo. Joe West is back. I can't imagine the majority of the starters playing much more than a quarter or so in this one. The Stamps, they only have one game left. And with the way the opponents have been, they won't play a meaningful game probably for an entire month till November 20th for that West final.
Just a minor correction. They're still two wins away from tying the Eskimos.
Okay,
they've only got 14 on the year. So,
okay.
But you're right. I mean, it's been a historic year for the Stampeders. I don't think we haven't seen anybody win 13 in a row in this league for a long, long time. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing, what Patrick just touched on there, Patty. And that's, you know, how do you manage the starters' times here in the last two games of the season? Do you play Bo Levi Mitchell for the whole game?
Yeah.
Does he play the first half? Does he play one quarter? Do you treat it like the preseason? I don't know what's going to happen, but it does sound like they want to get a lot of guys in the lineup. And Jerome Messam even tweeted it earlier today, saying a lot of guys making their season debut for the Stampeders tonight. So I think you're going to see a lot of bodies in there, and I think you're going to see some managed time for the starters here in the first half especially.
Well, and look, you've got the Stampeders, I believe, fully want to chase down that 16-1-1 record. And to do that, they have to beat the Argos, and they got to finish off their season strong. I think absolutely they want to finish their season perfect on home field, all of that type of stuff. But what there needs to be a good balance struck, and that is going to be the biggest challenge for Dave Dickinson and this coaching staff in the final two games, is finding that balance of, okay, we need, look, that extra week off at the end of the season complicates this even more. Yep. Because you want to have Bo Levi Mitchell still playing, and you want to have him getting some meaningful reps going into that three-week break, but you also don't want him to get hurt. You don't want what happened to Daron Mayo happen to somebody else. You know, that Marque McDaniel situation isn't good. I mean, Daron Mayo's out long-term. He's got a torn patella tendon. Like, that's a long-term injury.
Might not even play next year.
Exactly. Like, we're talking about a long time he's going to be out. And so that probably is in the back of Dickinson's mind as well. It's a very delicate balance he's got to strike, and I'm really fascinated as to how I don't know how he's going to do it. But I think we're going to, come Monday when we're talking about this team again, Will, I think we're going to know a little bit more about how they want to strike that balance with what we see tonight against Toronto.
And we've talked about it before, especially in football. You touched on a little bit. You cannot replicate game speed and game type of contact and game, you know, reactions, reading the defense. You can't replicate that in practice, no matter how hard you try. So it's an extremely tough balance here the last two games, but I think, you know, the Daron Mayo injury last week probably put some things in Dickinson's head. The bye in the final week of the season put some things in his head. There's a lot to think about here, and I think they're going to do everything properly and try to do everything the right way. But at the same time, you can't predict what the future holds, so wait and see. But should be a fun one tonight. The Stampeders looking to go 9-0 at McMahon. That's a pretty impressive streak.
Kickoff at 7 o'clock tonight. Again, note that start time. I know a lot of the tickets say 8 o'clock, and I know some of the TV listings say 8 o'clock, but it is a 7 o'clock kickoff at McMahon Stadium tonight between the Stampeders and the Toronto Argonauts. Final home game of the regular season and the second last home game this season. Of course, they'll have the West Division final a little bit later on in November. And just remember that start time. And also remember, for Alberta Marine coming up at 6 o'clock, Matty Rose has got your Real Football Show. That is your Calgary Stampeders report.
The Calgary Stampeder report, brought to you by ATB Financial. Put your money where your heart is with ATB Financial. Bank on Alberta and bank on a strong return. Who's got your back? At ATB, we do.
Who do the Flames need more from right now? We're kicking that and much more around on our Daily Flames Roundtable next. Big Show continues from Mr. Fireplace here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. He's Will, I'm Pat, and he's Derek Wills, the play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames. It's time to convene our Daily Flames Roundtable with far too much to talk about right now with the Flames, I think, through five games. There is a lot to sink our teeth into, and we'll start nice and easy, Mr. Wills, because I know that you and Lou and I got into this last night on the Basement Systems Hot Stove Lounge, but there are players the Flames need more from right now. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Who do the Flames need more from as we're five games into the season?
Well, Sean Monahan scored a huge goal for them on Tuesday night in overtime, and that was a step in the right direction for him. Johnny Gaudreau got his first goal of the season last night, so baby steps for him as well. But I still think they need more from their top two guys offensively, and I think they need more from Sam Bennett as well. I mean, in my opinion, he was their best player, maybe both offensively and defensively as far as forwards were concerned in the preseason. He's been pretty solid defensively so far in the regular season, but hasn't exactly been dangerous offensively. So I think that's where I'd start.
For me, yeah. For me, it's all about Sam Bennett's line. I think the Gaudreau Monahan, you're starting to see starting to see signs of them slowly breaking out of a little bit of a slump. And I think that certainly the preseason argument is somewhat valid still to this point. And I think you're seeing some of that rust, you know, being shaken off as the games go along here. But for me, you know, Michael Backlund and Frolik have been terrific. I think the Monahan and Gaudreau line is showing signs of life at times. But the Bennett, Brower, and you know, kind of a floating winger spot at this point, that line to me needs to do more offensively. Brower's got a handful of goals, and he's been pretty good. But I certainly think, you know, as Derek mentioned, after the preseason he's had, I think it's, you know, certainly safe to say it's been a disappointment through five games for Bennett. Mm-hmm. Didn't have a ton of points in the preseason, but he had a lot of offensive chances, a lot of buzz whenever the puck was on his stick. And right now, taking last night, for example, I don't think he was very good last night. I didn't really notice him a whole heck of a lot. I think, you know, the Flames would like that line to get going. And if there is more offense elsewhere, it would help guys like Monahan and Gaudreau break out too.
Guys, can I offer a theory on Sam Bennett specifically? And I want both of your takes on this. For me, I wonder if, because Derek, I'm completely with you. I thought Sam Bennett was one of the most noticeable forwards that we saw throughout the preseason. He was involved offensively. He was involved in the two-way game. From what I've seen through five games from Bennett, he's been very strong defensively. He's gotten the job done there. I wonder if there's not a little bit of kind of what happened for a little while with Michael Backlund, where Backlund was very much focused on the defensive side of the game. He was taking on difficult responsibilities. You take a look at some of Bennett's matchups so far. I mean, he's had to go up against the Sedins for a good chunk of that game against Vancouver. He had to see a lot of McDavid in the game in Edmonton. I mean, he's had to take on some pretty tough matchups. I wonder if focusing so much on the defensive side of things and not having that part slip has maybe made it so the offensive side of things isn't as impactful. That's not an excuse, Derek, but it happens with young players in this league as they're transitioning to being a top centerman. I wonder if there's a little bit of that going on right now.
I think that's absolutely a big part of it, Pat. And I must admit, when the season started, I wondered if this was going to work because, quite frankly, Sam Bennett, who spent about three quarters of last season playing left wing and about a quarter playing at center, was much more effective offensively playing the wing because he had fewer defensive responsibilities. So I wondered if it was going to be a successful transition for him going from left wing to center permanently. At least that's what the hockey club would like him to do starting this season. And all those questions were answered for me in the preseason. But again, and this is sometimes a tough lesson to learn, you have to take what you see in the preseason with a grain of salt. And he was really good on both sides of the puck in the preseason. So I came into the regular season expecting him to have a breakout year. As a matter of fact, I predicted he'd score between 25 and 30 goals. That's how good I thought he was going to be offensively. And he still might get there. But right now, he's one of a number of guys, and he's not the only one. I don't want to just single out Sam Bennett here, but he's one of a number of guys who, to me, is thinking too much out there. And I think they've learned the system that Glenn Gullitson has implemented, but they haven't yet mastered it to the point where they can play it without thinking about it.
It's a great point that Pat brings up, and Derek pretty much illustrated exactly where I was going to go, and that is the fact that he did play a lot of wing last year. And as a young man in this league, you sometimes, you know, don't know exactly what your responsibilities are as a center. And this year, especially with a new system, he's trying to get familiar with where Glenn Gullitson wants him to be in his own zone. And I think for him, too, as a young player, you know, and a guy who put up a ton of points in junior, sometimes it's hard to swallow that you got to be the last man out of the zone. And sometimes it's hard to really, you know, think about what you've got to do defensively. And I think right now he is maybe thinking too much about that defensive side of things. And as a result, that defensive side of his play is improving, but the offense is lacking. So I think we're going to see it play itself out here. But I think Derek was bang on when he was talking about the wing, because that's where I was going to go. I mean, he didn't really play a lot of center last year. So now, you know, playing full-time center and playing a new system, it's kind of all snowballing at once.
And guys, it's not just the forwards who are trying to adjust here. I think it's the top three defensemen as well, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I think absolutely, you know, Giordano, Brody, and Hamilton are certainly in a spot where I think they're trying to adjust to what is being asked. I mean, look, I don't think that we're talking, Derek, about crazy changes from Bob Hartley to Glenn Gullitson. But, you know, the stretch pass isn't a thing anymore. They don't want to rely on that as heavily as they did. They're exiting the zone slightly differently. They're entering the zone slightly differently. And so there are different responsibilities. And yeah, I think absolutely there's some adjustments going on there.
Yeah, and you're right. That stretch pass isn't a part of the Flames' game plan anymore. And I think it's taken the guys a little while to wrap their heads around that. In this system, shorter passes are going to be much more effective. And I think that once they get used to that, they're going to have a much easier time gaining that offensive blue line, especially on the power play, because what they used to do was stretch out that defense with that long first pass, mm-hmm. and then quite often they'd back the puck up, and that's where the defenseman would get involved in the rush. And quite often, they'd lead the charge into the offensive zone. We're not seeing that anymore, and they're going to get there. And you know what, guys? Looking at the glass half full as opposed to half empty, what I like about the first five games of the season is what I'm seeing from the bottom six forwards and the bottom two defensemen, because those were big question marks for me coming into this season. I thought the Flames' top six forwards were going to be really good. I thought their top four defensemen, or at least their top three, were going to be really good. I wondered about their depth, but I have no complaints at all about the way the bottom six forwards and the bottom two defensemen, and when I say that, I mean Brett Kulak and Derek Engelin have played, and when the top guys get going, as long as the bottom guys are still going, this is going to be one heck of a hockey team.
He's Derek Wills. He is the play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames. He's Will Nault. I'm Pat Steinberg. This is our daily Calgary Flames roundtable here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Okay, we'll see if we can get to two more topics. Maybe not, but we will get to this one. Brian Elliott, and we don't know who's getting the start tomorrow against St. Louis. I think there's a pretty good bet, though, that he gets the start against his former team. We shall wait and see. Derek, three games into his Calgary Flames career, he has allowed 14 goals, and the numbers don't look good. He's yet to get his first win. Should we be worried about Brian Elliott? Is he just fighting it right now? Or is it just a case of perhaps the team not playing well enough in front of him? Derek, where are you on Calgary's big goaltending acquisition this summer?
I think it's a little bit of both of those things, Pat. Throw the first game out. He was not himself in that first game against the Oilers. Gave up six in a 7-4 loss. Thought he was a lot better in the second game. And I thought he was okay last night. I don't think you could say it's Brian Elliott's fault that the Flames lost last night. Mm-hmm. Here's what I think the difference will be between him winning and losing. One or two saves a night. I think that's all it's going to take. And they're not saves that he necessarily should make, but I think they're saves that he could make. And he kind of alluded to that in his post-game comments last night. So he's going to have to make one or two more saves a game, and if he can do that, I think he starts turning some of these losses into wins.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the fact that his first three games, and again, this is kind of similar to what we talked about with Sam Bennett. I mean, in the preseason, Brian Elliott was lights out. I mean, what, he allowed two goals on 50-plus shots, and, you know, not a lot of things were getting by him. So, again, take that preseason with a little bit of grain of salt, but at the same time, makes you think that, okay, he still has it in him, and it's a little bit of a three-game bad stretch. And, you know, obviously all the breakaways and odd man rushes don't help things out when it comes to Brian Elliott trying to make some key saves. So, I'm certainly not worried about him at this point because of that preseason, and you obviously wanted to get back there at some point, and you need that big save when your team is looking for something here. But, you know, as for tomorrow, I would go right back to Brian Elliott. I think right now we're talking about him trying to get out of this rut. You kind of need to keep letting him play, and I think playing against a former team is important for a guy, especially a goaltender, I think, and for a guy that, you know, has spent a significant chunk of time and had a significant role with that team. I would go back to Brian Elliott again tomorrow, and he's probably not all that confident right now, so if you move away from him again, that might be even a bigger blow to his mindset. So I would go back to Brian again tomorrow and then reassess things after that. I think we're going to see Chad Johnson sometime in the next three games, because it's three games in four nights, but I would go back to Brian tomorrow. Derek, what about you?
I would probably go in the other direction tomorrow, and here's why, Will. Because Brian Elliott can still get a crack at his former team next Tuesday, and he can do it on the road with a little less pressure and probably playing behind a team that's going to play a little simpler brand of hockey. And most teams do play a simpler game on the road than they do at home. And here's the other reason why. The Flames need to feel good about themselves as a group, and they really do need to win tomorrow's hockey game. If they go 1-3 on this home, and that's not a good way to go on the road. You're not helping your confidence, and you're not helping your momentum. So at this point in time, the truth is Chad Johnson's been the better of the two goaltenders. He's picked up three of a possible 4 points in his two starts, and he has made those one or two saves that aren't should be saves, but are could be saves, and he's made them in the first couple of games that he's played. So if you put Chad Johnson in there tomorrow night, the guys feel confident in front of him. He feels confident behind the guys, and you can find a way to beat a very good Blues team at home. Well, I think that helps the forwards and the defensemen feel better about themselves. And if they're playing better, they're going to make it easier for the guy behind them. So I probably go Chad Johnson tomorrow night. Wouldn't be shocked if they went back to Brian Elliott. And then I give Elliott at least one of those two games on the road.
Yeah, and I've kind of gone back and forth on it. Last night I said Johnson. The whole thing about facing his former team kind of has swayed me over to Elliott, and I don't like to ride the fence very often, but on this one I guess I'm leaning slightly towards Brian Elliott, but I'm not really convicted one way or the other. I'm curious as to what they do tomorrow though when they take on the St. Louis Blues. They want to finish off this homestand strong. They've got two games, difficult ones on the road, then back at home, and then, as we all know, November is an extremely difficult month when it comes to games on the road for this team. So, yeah, I'll be curious to see how it all plays out. Good stuff, my friend. Derek, we will talk to you again on Monday on the roundtable, and we'll see you down at the Saddle Dome tomorrow.
Sounds good. See you guys tomorrow.
Derek Wills is the play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames, and that concludes our daily Calgary Flames roundtable. We'll do it again on Monday. We're live from Mr. Fireplace this afternoon, 5410 17th Avenue Southeast, where it's spin to win until tomorrow. So the selection here, second to none. Come on in, spin the wheel, and you could be saving anywhere between 15 to 50% off of your purchase. Now's the time to save big on Heat and Glow fireplaces. No one builds a better fireplace than Heat and Glow, and no one has a better deal than Mr. Fireplace. These guys are, in terms of service, expert, in terms of selection, outstanding. And even better, once your purchase is made, they're going to service, repair, all that type of stuff, and continue taking care of you. There's a reason why these guys have been in the city for almost 50 years, and there's a reason why they continue to be our partner on Flames Warm-Up. Mr. Fireplace is where we are until 6 o'clock, 5410 17th Avenue Southeast. We'll focus back in on the NFL around the corner. And if you missed Jason Lacanfora with us earlier today, he got us up to date on the big story from the NFL, and that is this Josh Brown situation. And once again, when it comes to the New York Giants kicker, the NFL and now one of its member teams looks really, really bad in a domestic violence situation. Jason Lacanfora will get us up to date on a really tough story to wrap your head around next on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960. The NFL once again has a high-profile domestic violence case on its hands. This time it involves Josh Brown, New York Giants kicker, and once again, it seems like the NFL has gotten it wrong in terms of how to handle it. The New York Giants seem to have gotten it wrong as well. Here's basically the latest. Josh Brown was put on the commissioner's exempt list today after the league suspended him one game, and this goes back to 2015 when they suspended him one game. More additional information has come to light in recent days, and we'll let the rest come from Jason Lacanfora, our NFL insider from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com, joined us earlier today and gave us the latest on the Josh Brown situation in New York.
Yeah, his career, I would say, is very much in jeopardy, and I don't expect to see him kick again at this point. He's been placed on the commissioner's exempt list, which was a long-standing list that no one had ever paid any attention to and that barely got used for a long time until that's where they kind of stashed Greg Hardy and Adrian Peterson a few years back when they were, if you recall, under review for, in one instance, child abuse, for the other instance, domestic violence. So they got paid to basically go away and disappear until the league was ready to hand down discipline. In this case, they already handed down discipline on Josh Brown, similar to Ray Rice. Now the league says that what has come to light, the journals in particular where Josh Brown writes seemingly at length about what appears to be serial abuse of his wife and family, the league says it was not privy to that when it handed down the original one-game suspension. So now, while they continue to investigate what they consider to be new evidence, they move him to the commissioner's exempt list. The Giants don't play next week. They have a bye. I would not be surprised if by the time the Giants play again coming out of the London game, we have word that Josh Brown has been suspended, I mean, at least six games, I would assume, possibly longer, maybe indefinitely. And then we could have appeals coming from that, because like Ray Rice, who said, wait a minute, I got suspended twice for the same thing, you know, Josh Brown will probably make that similar argument. But regardless, as a practical matter, we're talking about a kicker, a good kicker, but not a, you know, not a kicker who people were trying to trade for. I mean, this was a guy who was on the free agent market a few months ago who, yep, outside of the Giants, didn't have people beating down his door. If Ray Rice, right, who was an all-pro running back, can't get a workout from one incident while it was captured on video, you know, it's one incident. Someone who has written in their own words at length about abusing his wife on a regular basis, in his own words, that's now part of the public record, I can't imagine that a kicker ever gets another shot.
Jason, the NFL was very quick to trumpet their domestic violence policy, mm-hmm, a couple of years ago in the wake of Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson, so on and so forth. And part of that domestic violence policy was a baseline 6-game suspension. Yet Josh Brown only got one game when original allegations came to light. Now, I know there's probably extenuating circumstances, but it seems like for many on the outside, that doesn't compute. How can the NFL explain that?
Well, when I speak to executives there, what they say is, based on what we were able to acquire, the information we were able to acquire at the time we made the decision, we were looking at one instance that we knew of where they believe there was quote-unquote credible evidence that some sort of a physical altercation took place in Brown's house with him and his wife, involving him ripping the telephone out of her hands and then her calling 911 and then there being a subsequent investigation. The league would say that it was not aware of his journals, it was not aware of repeated behavior, that his ex-wife did not cooperate with their investigation, and nor does she have to, and that's entirely her right not to. They would say that the DA there in King County never put forth, never adjudicated this. You know, basically, charges were dropped, more or less, that it didn't go to court. They didn't push through trying to, put him on trial. And they would say that the law enforcement people there in King County, including the sheriff, who the league claims four representatives of the league at various times tried to acquire any and all evidence that might be germane to the case, they say they were rebuffed. But the reality is they now are in the business of sorting this stuff out because, you know, obviously you're handing down suspensions, you're creating discipline, you're creating new policies, like you alluded to. You know, first offense is supposed to be 6 games, second offense is supposed to be lifetime banishment, and we have yet to see that applied as it was written now, you know, 2 years later. This is always going to be a complicated situation. You most likely won't get full cooperation from various parties involved for various reasons. And you can't always count on law enforcement to drop the hammer because, as we know, they're not getting the level of cooperation that they might want in order to fully bring something to trial. So saying all that, though, it does not look good. Had the NFL simply applied the 6-game principle here, they would have spared themselves a lot of aggravation and a lot of explanation.